Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat, to grow into a wise, skilled, world-changing follower of Jesus Christ. With theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Degenau, and your host, Steve Bastian.
This is something we don't usually talk about, how this is sort of a private area for Chad and Steve and I. It's something we do occasionally, currently right now. So close your eyes and just get it into your mind, even if you're driving. We're cuddled up in a very cozy, warm room. Bearskin rugs thrown about. There's a roaring fire in the fireplace. We're all wearing very loose sweatpants, very loose sweatshirts. There's classical music playing in the background, and we're having what we like to call a read-in, where we all just kind of show up. We get our little blanket, we get a hot cup of cocoa. Steve makes a mean cocoa, and we just chill on our bearskin rugs in front of the fire. Occasionally, Steve will get up and he will gently poke the fire, and he will get it roaring again in case it gets a little cold. He will pass out slippers, and at the end of the evening, after 2 or 3 hours of reading, we will have a gentle hug, and then we'll go our separate ways quietly. It's a beautiful time. We don't do it often enough, guys.
And I don't drink the cocoa because I'm lactose intolerant.
Well, that's why I give you the special cocoa. But this time, guys, you came in here with such big man purses. They're filled with books. And, I show up with my iPhone. I am an Audible.
And he plays Angry Birds the entire time.
Okay. Well, it really helps.
He's listening to Audible through his headset.
Oh, that's it. Audible.
I mean, the picture books on Audible are nice, too. I do appreciate those. But, you guys definitely go through more books than I do by a long shot. It's amazing, actually, how many books that you talk about and read about. I know we want to talk a little bit this episode about the books that you're reading. Chad, you're finishing up your PhD right now. You're like working like a madman to do that, and you have like ridiculous amount of books. Can you tell us a little bit why you need to be reading like 50 books in like 2 months for your studies? Like what's the importance for learning about applied theology? Is all these books?
Yeah, so I'm studying applied theology in a professional doctoral program, and we do need to read a lot, but actually I have just arrived at the point where I no longer have to read things for class, and I get to read purely for pleasure. I've almost completed my final writing project. I'm in my fifth chapter, and I'm no longer doing research nor attending any regular classes.
So you call these your pleasure books?
So now I'm just reading pleasure books now.
I got a question for you, Chad.
Yes.
Did you reach the point that Ecclesiastes 12 talks about where of the making of many books there is no end and much study is weariness of the flesh? Did you reach the tipping point of Ecclesiastes 12?
Yes. I believe, in fact, that I did sometime around last Christmas. So,
how many books were left on the list when you reached that point?
I really like reading, and I like to read things that stretch me. And what was exciting throughout my entire program through Southern Seminary is that everything that I got to read, probably literally everything, was something that was stretching. And not necessarily a new topic, but that would get you to think about the topic in a new way. Or some of it was actually, you know, really quite new advances in scholarship that are really thrilling to think about. Particularly impactful on me has been getting a richer and better understanding of what's called biblical theology, which in simplest terms is looking through the chronological progressive revelation of God's truth in Scripture and understanding its links and development.
Yes. So what book right now is the most captivating book that you're reading that you can talk about right now? The one that's anyone asks you, what book are you reading? You get excited to tell them about.
Should we throw out the caveat that we're not going to say the Bible after every single answer? Can we just make sure that everybody knows that? Okay. We're not going to say the Bible for every single answer for this episode. Okay.
I think honestly, Yeah, as I said, I'm just reading for fun now. So I think probably part of the answer to my question is this wonderful book here. It's called East of Eden by John Steinbeck. And this is considered by many to be his most important work. Steinbeck himself calls this the first book. It's basically shows the power of primordial myth. It's the story of two families in California, and through each generation, they essentially go through the fall of Adam and Eve again. I mean, it's mixed with all kinds of biblical things. Of course, his theology isn't perfect, because he's an American author, not a theologian. But
oh, I thought you... No, because he's an American author, not an American.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a British author, it'd be quite different. But but it actually is quite a fascinating book, and it's a bit complicated. It's not quite your typical sort of... you know, whodunit novel of today, but you'd probably find it fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds good. Al, what books are motivating you right now?
You want me to do books or book? My top one right now?
Top one.
Okay, for the first time ever in my life, and I'm reading through The Institutes of the Christian Religion by John Calvin. It's not something I've ever done. Obviously, I know what the tenets of Calvinism are. I've studied them and whatnot, but I've never actually read all of the Institutes. I was, to be honest, very daunted by them. Even the idea of getting into them, I thought for sure there was no way I was going to understand any of this. They were going to be incredibly complicated. It was going to be a billion things I didn't know, and I would have no way to hang my jacket on any hooks there. And I found it to be exactly the opposite. It is incredibly readable, very understandable, logical. It's easy in its flow. I'm reading the free version. Okay, that was translated, I think, in the 1960s. No, it was 1930s, 1929. And I still find it very readable, very understandable. You get the impression of Calvin's love and respect for God and his word. I have a logical, philosophical, argumentative type bent. And so for me, that's what I love to read about. And I love philosophy and I love argument. And therefore, it just hits me exactly where I live. And he just spends time building and building and building his case and building his argument. And then he'll throw out someone else's argument and he'll explain why that is wrong. And it's beautiful. And really, it's increasing my love and increasing my understanding of how big God is and how wonderful God's word is.
That's awesome.
So would you say, Al, that there's a reason why it's been in constant publication for 400 years?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, it's really sad, though, because, like, for me, I'm a pastor, been a pastor for 11 years now. I would have called myself a Calvinist for probably, you know, 9 or 10 of those. And it wasn't until this year that I actually buckled down to read it. And so if there's anybody out there that's thinking that really wants to learn lots, don't be afraid of it. It's super duper readable. And in fact, there's a new version out there right now. And Chad, maybe you can talk about this. That's written in like NIV language, like even easier language.
There's to give some clarity for our listeners who might be interested in this. I think the edition that Al's reading is the Beveridge edition.
Yeah.
He has a 1929 print edition, but it was actually translated in 1845 and first published then.
Oh, okay.
So it's 19th century English. It's not horrible, though. It's quite well written. There is the Battles edition, which was done in the 1960s, I believe, which is the definitive copy today. It comes in two volumes, typically. But there's also another one done by Lane and Osmond, which is, I think it's a bit abridged, but it's very carefully abridged. Most of it is still in Calvin's own language. One of the two authors is an English professor who basically tweaks the English to make it modern. And one of them is a Calvin scholar who basically ensures that theology stays the same. And what they primarily cut out were the particular polemical issues of the day, say, versus the Roman Catholic Church's particular hierarchy of the day, things that don't go to Calvin's main arguments and that people get lost in today, but maintained all of Calvin's core theology. That's good. But I'd recommend any edition, whatever you can get your hand on.
Oh, you can go to monergism.com and download the Institutes of the Christian Religion for free on your Kindle. And you got it. And so that way, if there's any words that you don't understand, you just poke them with your finger and then it tells you what they are.
Yeah, that cool. This is technology great. In the old days, you would have had to have a dictionary with you while you read Calvin.
I sat there poking books for years trying to find it, make it tell me what it understood, but it never worked.
It's like the Pillsbury Doughbook.
That was awful. That's the worst joke I've ever heard.
That's why I only go to the library to the pop-up section.
Fully interactive.
It's more a little more interactive, yeah.
The
absolutely.
Pop-up section.
Hey, Chad, what books are giving you a deeper insight into God's word, and why are they doing that?
Okay, I think two things are right now. One of them is this wonderful book by Robert Louis Wilkins called The Spirit of Early Christian Thought. He studies and looks at some of the writings of the early church fathers. Particularly, he focuses, I think, on Origen in the 3rd century, Gregory of Nicaea in the 4th, mm-hmm. Augustine in the 5th, and Maximus the Confessor in the 7th, as some of the most influential people in all of history. And one of the conclusions he comes to is that he talks about how they stand out as rewarding and profound, much like Calvin does. They can be read as living interpreters and not just historical sources. But what you find in the early church fathers, and Wilkins helped me just to discern what the early church fathers are saying a little better, is to be impressed with their scriptural foundations and how they bring the Bible to life. I've been actively reading in the fathers, the patristics, for years, and they've really shaped my thinking and my theology. And so a book like this is something that takes that, and it would work as an introduction. I'm using it more as a sort of synthesizing exercise to sort of say, yeah, let's think a little more through about the impact and the backgrounds of this particular work by Augustine or whatever. So that's fascinating. The second thing that I would say that I'm into right now, and I highly recommend, although some of you may not want to read all, 1,400 pages or whatever, this bad boy. Yeah, this is called A New Testament Biblical Theology, The Unfolding of the Old Testament and the New by Greg Beale, who also has that wonderful commentary on the New Testament use of the Old Testament. This is one of those kind of mind-blowing books where it's not a new concept, because we all know that the New Testament quotes the Old Testament, and as I preached and taught, I've had to interpret it a lot, but he helps you to see the principles behind that in such a refreshing and an amazing way. And you know what I'm going to say is, if you want to read Beale, this book's probably too heavy for the average person to jump into. Instead, I would recommend that you read his smaller book called God With Us, which is an abridged version for popular reading of his book, The Temple and the People of God, both of which are amazing. But God Dwells With Us by Greg Beale and something Kim, and I'll make sure we get a link to that one, does the same kind of principles, although he's doing it within he's actually showing you how he does it. In this one, it's more the background philosophy of how he does it. Both of those are really, I would say, having just an impact on me right now and the way I'm thinking through biblical issues.
Al, are there any books that are helping you as a pastor of a church right now that are giving you guidance and insight as a spiritual leader?
I'm spending a lot of time in the institutes at this point, and so those are definitely affecting me. But if I had to pick another one, I just finished recently the Screwtape Letters again. Mm-hmm. And I know if you probably go back to the last two episodes we did about books, you probably hear I said Screwtape Letters again.
Yeah.
I keep going back there because that book, I like books that help to shape my thinking, and I like books that give me an insight. And I think C.S. Lewis has massive insight in the Screwtape Letters as to the what's happening in the human heart and the temptations that beset us most. But a lot of time we think that we read the Screwtape Letters and it's the How Satan Works book. But what it tells us more about is our own human heart and about our own human issues and about what the reason Satan can mess with that is because we let him, right? And so if you don't know what it is, it's basically this senior demon who is writing letters to his junior demon. We don't read the junior demon side, just the senior demons. And he is giving advice about how he can corrupt and tempt this man who then becomes a Christian, and how he can corrupt and tempt and diminish the ministry of this Christian. And then throughout, you can see the undercurrent of how God is working. And this is the genius of Lewis, is that you see the undercurrent of God working and God defending him, even as the demons are very confused about what's happening and trying to work against it. It's an amazingly written book. Everybody likes it. I'm not new in this. But if you're looking for some insight into the human heart and the human mind and how Satan and how humans work, it's a great book.
That's awesome. Yeah. Are there any books that either you're reading that really would impact family life? And I'm trying to find a book that's going to really impact family life and apologetics. And
I'd recommend the Bible.
Yeah, we do use that one. Yes.
Right now, no, I'm not reading a specific book focused on family life. Although last year I read Tim Keller's book on marriage, and I found that really helpful. Here, this is – I am – just started. John Wycliffe, Myth and Reality by – G.R. Evans,
yep,
is basically the story of the founding of Oxford University, which he was kind of early into. This guy has such a huge impact. He's called the Morning Star of the Reformation. And this book that will help at least so far as I'm looking at it, I think to help with understanding where our education systems came from, what their purpose is. They're just so deeply rooted in Christian thinking and theology and Christian worldview. And today our universities are trying to, you know, basically kick out any vestiges of that, which is probably problematic, being that that's what they're founded on. They're destroying their own foundation. So, interesting book. Mm-hmm.
Can I follow up on that one? If you're looking for a popular one about that understanding of education and how education should work, I highly recommend, again, C.S. Lewis, The Abolition of Man.
Oh, yes. Great book. Yes.
Which is all about the sort of him presenting and the importance of education and how the downward slide of ignorance really is what we're teaching our children right now, or lack of teaching our children. So it's very short and very readable. And, well, I wouldn't say very readable. It's readable.
It's C.S. Lewis.
Yeah,
C.S. Lewis is approachable.
If you're an educator or you're interested in education, or you're interested in the education of children, or for that matter, the decline and fall of Western civilization, The Abolition of Man.
Abolition of Men, as one I haven't read, and it sounds like it should be high on my list.
It should be.
Hey, yeah, wait, Steve, aren't you an educator of some sort?
Yes.
I will save Steve. Steve, what's on your bookshelf?
Yeah.
What's on my bookshelf? I've been working through two books.
Calvin and Hobbes, too long. The authoritative.
Close, close.
Right. And Peanuts.
Garfield's always in there.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. No, I've been working through Knowing God by J.I. Packer.
One of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, and I think as you, this one of the podcasts we did in the past, you both said that was a great book, or one of you convinced me of it, and I went and got it on Audible. By the way, if you haven't used an Audible account, get the Groupon. You get 3 months for $9 total.
Oh, wow.
So that's three books of any size that you can download.
If
so
you cancel
awesome.
Your subscription later, do you get to keep the books you've downloaded?
You can put your account on pause, and once a year you have to go and say, yes, I want to keep it on standby, and you keep your books. So that's how I'm doing it right now. I got like 9 books in there, and I'm slowly working through them. So
I have a further question. Have you found any books that the guy who does the voice for Candy Crush has actually read the entire book of?
See, I've never done anything with Candy Crush. I am completely ignorant.
What is Candy Crush? Is it a show?
Everybody who knows Candy Crush just laughed out loud, okay? Because that was a funny joke. That was hilarious.
Okay. Okay, we'll take your word for it. But Knowing God, in a summary, when people ask me about the book that I'm reading, I say I started off thinking I was kind of like an ant compared to God, like a little the insect ant. Now I feel like I'm a little bit in compared to His glory and His magnificence and His love and compassion and grace. I feel like the piece of sand that the ant is standing on. It's kind of, that's where I'm at with it, is just realizing how big and awesome God is and how much He cares for us individually, which is just, it's pretty amazing. And the other book I'm reading is not a scriptural book, but it's Malcolm Gladwell, The Tipping Point, kind of a social economics and how things work like that way. And, you know, I definitely, with my, you know, the school I work with and, you know, some of the other stuff I do outside, I am trying to keep aware of where is things going down the road and, you know, be aware of what are those cues and signs of a changing technology or something like that. So,
yeah, Gladwell's an interesting guy.
I quite enjoy his books. I usually find them quite, especially for me, I find them quite fascinating, and I will even follow up on his research. And he references really relevant things that are easy to understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he always releases them in audiobooks, and he reads them himself. So,
oh, cool.
We just have a few more minutes. Free resources for finding books for people. I gave my Audible little sheet there using Groupon to get 3 months. So that's 3 books for $9, so 12 hours of books for $3. That's pretty awesome.
If you don't have a Kindle, you're crazy. Because if you like to read, or you like theology, or you like classical books or anything, my Kindle has paid for itself a dozen times between Monergism, which is
just a dozen times.
So between Monergism, which is a website dedicated to putting out good classic Christian literature, CCEL, the Christian Classics Ethereal Library, which has tons and tons and tons of Christian books, and then the classic literature that you find just for free in the Kindle store. Right now, I'm reading Sherlock Holmes, and I read Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, The Picture of Dorian Gray. I mean, like I said, I'm all about philosophical thinking and trying to challenge myself. I highly recommend it. If you want to read something fictional, but you want to keep your brains on, go read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for free from the Kindle store. It's all about the battle of sin and the inner man. Read The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. It's a Gothic fiction novel, but it's like Ecclesiastes meets philosophy meets Proverbs. You know, you can get all the collected works of Sherlock Holmes, which is going to be a huge influence on your thinking and an amazing story. It just changes the way that you process the world, and it's all free.
Yeah, and if you do a little bit of looking around, you find, for example, Desiring God, John Piper's ministry, provides most of his books for free. You can read them on your Kindle. All over the place. R.C. Sproul, I think, recently just made all of his smaller books, the Easy Readers, free on Kindle as well.
They're free
the other one that I would want to point out is the Logos software. You can actually export Logos books onto your Kindle, so if you prefer that reading platform, or you can read on your tablet or your computer screen. There's great resources in there. You do have to kind of buy in at the beginning. Well, I guess you probably could just get the freebies at the beginning. But every month they put out a free book that's a substantial book in Christian theology commentary and so on. And they have several things. They also have a classical studies software suite, which is exactly the same. And they give away free classics, Aristotle, Plato, that sort of thing.
That's cool.
And so I kind of use all of their platforms and get all their freebies each month. So every month I'm getting several free books.
If you're not super duper choosy, but you're just looking for good, you know, Christian literature, Logos has a program called Verso, and Verso has lots of books that they send out, and they read, and that reads all the Logos books.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
Wow, that's great. Well, thanks so much, guys, for sharing the books you're reading. I think it's time for me to go and refresh your cocos.
Please and thank you.
Stock up the fire.
That's nice, Steve. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for sharing your book bags. I'm going to get back. I'll put my headphones on and get back to listening to my audiobooks.
One of my slippers fell off.
I'll get
that for you.
Let me get it. Get it.
To find out more about carnivore theology, or if you've got any topics or questions you'd like us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. You can also leave a message on our SpeakPipe page. That's at www.speakpipe.com/carnivoretheology. If you like what we're doing, please share with your church and friends. Like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
And me, your host, Steve Bastian. Today's question is, what books or Alan Chad reading?
Could you say, and me your host, Mr. Dress-Up next time?
Oh, it's so nice.
You like it when I do that?
Can I be Casey and Chad be Finnegan?
Totally. I've always felt more of a Finnegan.
You've looked more like a Finnegan.
Do you self-identify as a Finnegan?
I self-identify as Finnegan. My wife often puts me in the doghouse.
That's right. Okay, we're not going to say the Bible for every single answer for this episode.
And for me, anyway, it was going to be the Book of Mormon, so.
Bible fan fiction.
Yeah. Whatever it is, 1,400 pages or whatever.
It looks like your bookmark is right at the front.
It is. That's because I bookmark sections I thought might be good to read here.
Sure. What about you, Al?
Nope.
Okay.